There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
I'd like you to imagine for a second that you're competing in an Olympic final. You finished your event, dead level with another competitor, both of you in the gold medal position. A rules official comes over, gives you a couple of options. Either you compete once more against that opponent in a sudden death scenario, thereby putting it all on the line and with a 50-50 chance of your medal getting downgraded to silver, or you can keep the gold medal, call yourself an Olympic champion for the rest of your life, soak in the other fella. And by the way, the two of you are really good mates and both have come through a load of adversity together. When you put it like that, it's not much of a decision to make. I would call that a no-brainer. Hi, Murph.
Hey, Un, how's it going? I'd share a gold medal with you. I mean, I can't really imagine a situation where the two of us would be presented with such an option. But I mean, I would be more than happy to share a gold medal with you, Un. And you're just a work colleague, you know, at the end of the day.
Well, and a friend. I know we don't see each other in person so much anymore, but unbelievable. Hello, Monday Only listeners, World Service members, welcome friends, all of our friends, to the Second Captain's podcast. Incredible scenes at the high jump last night as Italy's Gianmarco Tamberi and Mutaz Barshim of Qatar decided to share the gold medals. I said they were given the choice of what to do. It was even more than that. It seems as though, when you watch it, it looks as though they're sort of helping the official along a little bit in the decision-making process. We'll play this for people.
We can continue with the jump-off.
Can we have two gold?
It's possible. It depends if you decide...
History,
if you both decide on...
Olympic champion.
I would say they're guiding the witness there. To use a legal
term. Both take gold, yeah. And your man's like...
Well, then we're agreed. I've had a great time discussing this, and we've all come to this decision together, which is very nice, you know.
Yeah, well done, rules official. You'll be in this viral moment. Don't worry about that. You're doing just fine. So that they tear off celebrating, the Italian Tamberi in particular, going absolutely haywire. Sprinting around, collapsing in joy, clutching his chest, totally overcome, all the good stuff that you're looking for in a moment. I've seen it described in a lot of ways, Murph, this sharing of the medal. An emotional moment, heartwarming, all that stuff. All of that is true. I've no issues with that. There is one word that pops up again and again that I do have a major problem with, though. Okay. This Guardian headline is typical. Impressive display of sportsmanship from the Italian and Qatari rivals hailed as one of Tokyo's 2020's most memorable moments. Sportsmanship? Sportsmanship. You've got the option of being an Olympic champion by sharing the medals with your friend, or potentially not being an Olympic champion by having a jump up. It's not sportsmanship. It's the most logical decision in the world. Sportsmanship. Sportsmanship would have been if one of them had come first and one of them had come second, and the guy who came first said, look, let's just swap the gold with silver.
Yeah, okay.
You know, we're both champions, but you're the real champion. This is, the two of them taking home gold medals is not my definition of sportsmanship.
It's pragmatism, not sportsmanship.
Pragmatism, logic, brass balls by Barshim, who was the one who was pushing the official in a certain way. I love it, by the way. I absolutely love it. Do not hold this up as sportsmanship, anybody.
Yeah.
It's self-interest.
Like, It is. I mean, I'm trying to come up with an alternative, with an alternative viewpoint.
I presented my argument,
you know,
way too much enthusiasm. You're afraid to burst my bubble on this one.
You
can see I'm on my high horse. I've started the week, even though it's Bank Holiday Monday, Murph. I'm feeling tired. I feel it in my voice a little bit. There's been a serious lack of sleep over the last few days. But I've started with this with a lot of enthusiasm. I put out a tepid take there, and you are... I feel like you want to tear it down, but you just don't have the heart to do it to me.
No. The only point I would make is that maybe there might be people out there, Owen, who might attach an asterisk to this gold medal. You know? Was he actually the best person at that Olympic Games? I mean, he wasn't really, was he? You know? There was someone else who was just as good as him. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm going to attach the asterisk. It's not my asterisk to attach, quite frankly, Ewan. But maybe there will be some that would say, well, gold medal, but...
Yeah. You know what else is attached, Murph? Gold medal is permanently attached to our two friends here as a rebuttal to anybody who wants to come up with that argument. You've got an asterisk there. You're showing me an asterisk. So yeah, I'll just take this gold medal in my pocket and show it to you here. Olympic champion. All the goodies that come with that.
Co-champion,
yeah. A few minutes after all that, the Italian lad Tamberi is off celebrating with his compatriot, Lamont Marcel Jacobs, who wins the 100 metres.
It was like he was just waiting for him there. He just waited in his lane. It was like, he'll be along in about 9.79 seconds. It's fine.
It was a sorry Sunday. It was a sorry Sunday in the end for the Irish medal challengers. Oh, it all went so terribly awry, from Kurt Walker losing a tight decision to Rory McIlroy losing out in a 7-man playoff.
I've never tried so hard in my life to finish third.
There was Aidan Walsh's injured ankle, Rhys McLennan's misplaced fingertips.
I know that I'll feel disappointment with this performance, but that's okay.
And I'm afraid, if you're coming to this show looking for some good news today, I ain't got any for you. It's been a miserable Monday that's accounted for Ciara McGeehan and Sarah Healy both eliminated in the heat of the 1500 and Phil Healy out of the 200.
There is so much to take from it, but when you give so much to an Olympic Games, an Olympic year, you just want to go out there and perform to your best.
So, Murph, where has it all gone wrong?
I know. I mean, so if we were to go through what happened yesterday in particular. Now, I went to bed at 10 o'clock on Saturday night. I slept for 5 hours, set my alarm, got up, 3:15, Kurt Walker. Like, Kurt Walker couldn't have done a whole lot more in a lot of ways. He was up against a very good fighter. His second round was, I think, maybe the best round of boxing produced by an Irish boxer at any Olympics in a long time. It was utterly sensational. He should have won that round 5-0 across all the judges. The fact that he didn't made it pretty difficult for him in the third round, and, you know, maybe he went chasing it a small bit. And I don't think there's like a massive amount of people saying that he was robbed by the judges or anything. It was a decision he could have got but didn't. A lot of people might look at Rory McIlroy not winning a medal and say, oh, well, you know, Rory's, you know, bottled it again, you know. Rory played really well. I mean, I don't know how many people actually stayed up from Kurt Walker onwards, but I mean, I ended up watching about 6 hours of that, the final.
You went straight through. No, I went back. I went back to it. I must confess, I met a few friends on Saturday evening as well. Wrapped it up early enough that I did manage to wake up for Kurt Walker. Got up, opened my eyes, put on the iPad, watched that, then found out immediately afterwards that Aidan Walsh had... I hadn't realised at this point Aidan Walsh was officially out of his fight. And I was like, oh, that's terrible for him, as I'm closing my eyes, getting straight back to sleep. And then set the alarm for 6 o'clock so I could watch the closing stages of the golf. But well done for going straight through.
Rory did really well. It was an absolutely unbelievable final round of golf. Like, it was so much fun. And the birdies going in everywhere. Rory hung in as long as he could. Had a putt on the 18th green that would have ended up giving him the bronze medal on his own. I mean, I had a feeling that 16 under was going to get him the bronze. And as it turned out, like, that was a brilliant putt on the 18th hole of regulation before he got into the playoff at all. And like, that was just a really unlucky. But it was pretty annoying. But, you know, he had actually played really well. I mean, I don't think that McIlroy can have too many regrets about.
He gave us unbelievable value, and the golf playoff gave us unbelievable value. I cannot believe some people on this podcast were questioning the whole point of golf being in the Olympics if they're just going to do a boring 72-hole stroke play event. Although, in a way, I was proven right, Murph. The new format that they've stumbled across is just straight playoff with as many golfers as you can possibly fit in there.
Murder ball. You know, just like pick like random numbers of golfers, set them off down the fairway. Say you've got one hole to compete for a bronze medal and just go for
what's
it.
What's a chess one called? It's not sudden death. It's something even more dramatic than that.
Oh,
somebody,
man.
One of our World Service members will remember. Magnus Carlsen, certainly, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I have to say that even though there had been disappointment at 10 a.m. yesterday, I was still like, well, you know, our Irish competitors, you know, we've been dying with our boots on, you know. And then Rhys was just so disappointing. And it's actually really hard to talk about because obviously you're talking about a guy who's doing things that no Irish gymnast has ever done before. I tweeted Rebecca Schumann, our contributor from last week, because I saw that she was still up. And I was like, are you waiting up for Rhys? And then she was retweeting my tweets to her. And then I started getting messages from American gymnastics fans talking about how much they love Rhys McGlennigan. You know, like absolutely unbelievable. Like there was someone who was tweeting me yesterday, staying up for Irish Twitter, let's manifest that medal for Rhys. I don't know what manifesting a medal means, but that's what Tia Vassilou was messaging me last night or yesterday morning at like 11 a.m. And then, you know, like that is just such a disappointment. Like the fact of the matter is that Rhys's entire career does boil down to these moments, and he made a mistake, however minuscule. And he's just going to have to live with that, you know.
He's living with it very well, judging by that interview, which was unbelievably positive afterwards. And so was the whole punditry around it. I thought was almost, I found too positive.
Yeah,
it's like almost unrealistic that it seemed like, well, you know, it's a learning stepping stone. You know, 3 years. Wait, who knows what's going to happen in 3 years?
Yeah.
I don't know what I want because
exactly.
On the one hand, I don't want athletes absolutely ripped apart inside either. You know,
yeah.
But it just felt like. Is everybody in a little bit of denial here about what's just happened, including Rhys himself? We'll talk to Sinead about this in a few minutes. I'm sure she'll be.
Yeah, and you know, like you know what we were talking about. I mean, someone was tweeting Shea Dodge, SEIDODGE. You should all be following him during the Olympics. It's absolutely unbelievable the amount of knowledge this guy has. He's on Irish Twitter. He works for balls.ie. But he was tweeting out like the sort of the winning scores of the last kind of four or five major competitions. And, you know, you would need a score in the region of 15-4 to get a bronze medal was kind of the upshot of what he was saying. And as it turns out, 14-9 was enough to win a bronze medal. So Rhys wouldn't even have had to have brought his A game to have won a medal, you know. And that's what I think is really disappointing. It was there for him. And it just didn't happen, you know. And there's no other reason for it other than pressure, you know. And pressure does things to athletes. And on this occasion, Rhys just couldn't. He just couldn't manifest that medal, Owen. He couldn't manifest that medal.
Armageddon is.
Oh yeah, the chess.
Death is called in chess. Yeah, after they go through sudden death rounds, they eventually get. I had to look it up there. I know we're a patriotic bunch, but I do have a theory. Another one, Murph. Another one here for you. That maybe we need to be even more patriotic. Maybe this is the problem over the last couple of days. We need to lean into those nationalistic emotions even harder, like this guy.
And Jamaica. It's
I love my country.
Quite the.
I'm a Swedish Viking.
You sure are, sir.
Yeah, that's a Daniel Saal there of Sweden. Well, you know, why am I? He described himself perfectly.
He is a Swedish Viking.
What is it? He is a Swedish Viking there. Right. We're going to talk today to our unofficial Olympics correspondent, Sinead O'Carroll, along with Cathal Dennehy in Tokyo. Still some medals to be fought for during the week, literally fought for in the case of Kelly Harrington, who's in the ring tomorrow. So we'll have loads more Olympics coverage in the next few days. It's also All-Ireland Hurling semi-finals next weekend.
Yeah.
I'm right on that. Yeah, it's hard to keep track after an amazing game at the weekend. And tomorrow features the return of Ken Early, fresh from his holidays and ready to spread his good cheer to everybody on the World Service.
Cheer up. How about you fucking wake up? Wake up.
That's a cheap shot for
it
me.
It's cheap even by your standards, Owen.
He's actually always in top form after holidays as well. So, you know, it's unfair to be playing clips like that. Well, I might just play it again, though, because I love it so much.
Cheer up. How about you fucking wake up? Wake up.
Yeah, there you go. Ken is going to be bringing some of that back tomorrow, and I'm intrigued to know how Shane Horgan and Michael Cheka are feeling about the Lions series, which has degenerated somewhat. It's never really felt great, this whole Lions experience this year, and it's just completely off the wall now on the pitch. And
off the wall is a pretty good way of describing it.
Yeah, it's a hell of a week for our members. If you want to join them, the start of the month is always a good time. Full value, you get for your 5 a month plus VAT for August, and you also get access, no matter when you sign up, you get access to all of our old shows.
And wait on, is there a minimum length of contract there, or is it just you just pay by the month?
No,
is it, or?
No. So you see the way it's 2nd of August now, right?
Yeah.
You pay your fiver a month. You pay your fiver a month, and the VAT is just dependent on where you are in the world, and that's out of our hands, I'm afraid. But you know, either way, a very, I would say, good value.
Yeah.
And you pay that money, and then you can get to say the how many days are in August, whatever the last day of August is. you can have a look and go, yeah, you know, I'm not sure about this. I'll just opt out. And what, are we going to come along, penalise you and say, no, you're paying for a year? No, there's no minimum 12-month contracts. That's just all you've, that's all you're staking on this. Has this been enough of a ridiculous radio style?
Radio ad, well, maybe not odd, but perhaps we'll leave it at that all the same.
Hold on, I mentioned the Lions, and I forgot to mention one man in particular. How did our favourite Scotsman get on?
You know, I had a huge amount of belief within the boys to come down here and win.
Stuart Hawk turns up
to
winning the bloody World Cup. I love it.
Stuart Hawk. I believed in the boys' ability.
Man of the match.
Scotland are a disgrace to work for. So, after a number of delays due to unprecedented Scottish involvement in the test team, this year's edition of the British and Irish Lions Peter Stagg Memorial Drink Your Own Urine competition, won every time it's been staged by a Scotsman, of course, has been definitively fixed for this coming Wednesday, as there are a number of Scottish players whose weeks are going to look a lot less busy once the Lions team for the third test is announced. Stuart Hogg is currently under investigation for an alleged biting incident. He categorically denies this, but if I was Robbie Henshaw, I'd be providing corroborating evidence to help the South African case, since it must be pretty fucking tiring to turn around after every box kick and watch a Scotsman flying through the air with balls bouncing off various parts of his anatomy. So long, Doohan. So long, Hoggy. So long, Rory, join a mole from the side of Sutherland. So long, Ali. If Liam Williams doesn't start the third test, Gatland is taking the pace on, and when it comes to the final week of a Lions tour, the only pace we should be talking about is what's in a Scotsman's glass. Bed, please, Killian.
You know, I had a huge amount of belief within the boys to come down here and win.
Stuart Hawk turns up
to
winning the bloody World Cup. I love it.
Stuart Hawk. I believed in the boys' ability.
Man of the match.
Scotland are a disgrace to work for.
Oh, I'm enjoying that slap.
An absolute disgrace of a Lions test?
Not great. Save that fire. Hold that fire for tomorrow, Murph. Right now, we got to talk about Olympics.
I said, Karen, it's Richard Keys.
Oh, dear!
Prehistoric banter.
Please, it was just banter.
Is not acceptable in a modern world.
Do you have any regrets?
None. There are some dark forces at work here.
The eyes have it. The eyes have it. Unlock.
Sinead O'Carroll is the editor of thejournal.ie when she's not watching Olympics all night and talking to us early in the morning. Hi, Sinead.
Good morning.
How are things? And Carl Dennehy has been doing great reporting from Tokyo for The Independent, amongst others. Carl joins us live from the stadium there. Carl, how are things?
Very good, Owen. Enjoying it out here.
Yeah, it's melting,
but enjoying it.
a hell of a night last night for track and field.
Yeah, incredible night. I did tweet out last night Con Hoolahan's old line of, you know, I missed the telly 90 while I was at the World Cup, and I kind of missed a lot of it, I'm not going to lie. I was down at the gymnastics centre for Reese McLenahan's final, and then myself and Eno Reardon of the Irish Times decided to hop in a taxi and got greedy and tried to see both in one night and get back. And we did get back in time for Thomas Barr's final. But running around the mix zone trying to talk to him, we kind of came up. And then at the end of the night, we're like, oh, we just missed one of the best nights ever of athletics.
These are the vagaries of trying to cover the Olympic Games, I suppose. It's constant split-second decisions, isn't it?
It really is. You can get greedy, you know. I kind of got greedy the first week and tried to see as many sports as I could. I went to the basketball, the tennis, the gymnastics and everything. And then, to be fair, I did a bit of work at some of them as well, but there's a temptation to become a bit of a fan and just to go see all the A-listers, you know. And
At least you're in taxis and not on media buses. That's a plus. I wasn't sure if you were allowed to do that over there at this time.
Yeah, we're on. It's kind of a blend of both. They give you 14 taxi vouchers. So a lot of the Irish journalists are starting to run dry on their taxi vouchers, and the taxis are ridiculously expensive here. If you don't get them, you have to book your taxis and give them a lot of info. So it's all COVID compliance. And then otherwise, it's media buses, which can, a 5 kilometer journey can take 90 minutes, and you can start to lose the will to live when you're on them. But no, they've done all they can to make it as good as they can. But it's a horrendously huge thing to have to organize during a pandemic, so you kind of certainly feel sympathy and put up with the difficulties that come your way.
Didn't you go see, I'm remembering a tweet from last week that you said about like the US men's basketball team, Simone Biles and some other ridiculous A-lister, and all three of them lost.
I did. I spiked them down with my presence. I went to see the US men's basketball one night and they lost to France. That was the first kind of A-lister. I went to see Naomi Osaka. She won her first round game. She lost the next day in the second round. Was it the third round? And then I went to see Simone Biles as well in the gymnastics, who I saw one single vault from her. And then that was the end of the road. And then I went to see the last one. That's when I tweeted it, that all those three had been gone asunder.
It's the Dennehy Hex.
Exactly. And then I went, my next one then was Novak Djokovic, who I went to see. And I remember I had a little bit of banter and tweeted for my next trick, Novak Djokovic. And he won the game. And then the next day, he lost. That was it. 20, I think it was 21 matches unbeaten for like 2 months. And I showed up and he loses the game after it. So something
where
going
were you
on here.
Park yesterday, Cahill? That would have been greatly appreciated there.
I think not even now you can stop Dublin.
Will we talk about Reese then, Sinead? I mean, there's the... I suppose we have to do it. Like, I was never so confident about something that I knew so little about. It was it was a combination of his own performance, obviously, in the qualifying rounds, his tweets in advance. Just seems so self-assured about having the work done and that kind of stuff, and talking about the pizza he's going to have afterwards. He just seemed super relaxed. Then the pre-match or the pre-event analysis on RTE did nothing to make me feel any less confident. They were talking about, let's not beat around the bush here, he's going for a medal and he thinks he can win gold. And to then see what we saw, it was one of the more heartbreaking Olympic moments in our history, is it fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. I was thinking about coming on this morning, thinking, God, the last time we came on, we were like screaming at each other, being like, what a night. And this felt totally different. It felt like, how are we going to get the tone of this right? Because, you know, Louise McClenaghan's in a final of the pommel horse, like the hardest apparatus in gymnastics. He gets to a final. He has all of that talent. He has the right attitude, like you were saying, Owen. So like, this is not a bad news story, but he wanted a medal. We were expecting a medal. And I think a few people who were asking me, because they've heard me on the second captains or whatever, I'd say, no, there is loads of falls in a pommel horse. You do fall off, and it doesn't matter how good you are, like these things happen. Like during finals, not more than one person will fall off or make a gigantic mistake which knocks them out of contention. So I was super nervous. Like, I was more nervous than I have been for anything that's not my own event that I have wanted someone to win in a long, long time. And I'm not sure, like, obviously we can all do our armchair psychology. Max Whitlock going out first and being able to just get out there, get his routine done first. Obviously, he is mega talented. He had the high difficulty and nailing it. And I'm just not sure waiting until seventh then, like, I just, the trepidation was building in me going, how is he going to keep that cool? And I kept going, no, he is really good at keeping the cool. He's a good young lad, but he's also a 22-year-old at the Olympics in his first final. So that has to play into it somewhere along the way, no matter how much work you've done.
Carl, what was it like to witness?
Very strange. Very odd. Yeah, it's funny. I went down and some of the, as we're queuing up for the mix zone afterwards, some just in reference to going out seventh of the eighth. Now, I suppose being a complete amateur person trying to understand gymnastics, I went down saying to my friend, you know, that's a huge advantage, surely, you know, like you get to see exactly what Whitlock and what the guy from, was it Lee from Chinese Taipei had done, his two big rivals, and know exactly what score he needed and what he needed for a medal, essentially. But then as some of the British journalists were pointing out as we were queuing up to get into the mix zone, they very much assumed that Reese, the pressure of Max Whitlock's near perfect routine had got to Reese, and that was the flip side of going on last, that when you see two of your big rivals absolutely nail those scores in the mid-15s, you know, right at the edge or edge outer limit, I suppose, of what Reese was capable of, that maybe it got to him. Reese very much denied and just shot down the idea that he felt any more pressure. He did look very nervous, but I mean, there's no athlete who walks out for an Olympic final, especially not a pommel horse, a 45-second thing that requires perfection, who doesn't look nervous. No matter how much you try to say you're objective in the media, I think it's impossible to stand opposite someone, especially someone young, the age of 22, who, and you're just looking at their dream kind of being destroyed and disintegrating in front of them, specific, I suppose, to this Olympics, obviously, because we know Reese will come again. And yeah, your heart just went out to him. It was a strange setup. There was a little bit of atmosphere in the gymnastics arena. The athletes are allowed to go. And I guess being indoors, you get a little bit of applause and cheers and things like that. The Brazilians made a good noise because their girl won the women's vault last night. But yeah, just surreal, I suppose, really. And just, I think a lot of people have made this point over the last 24 hours for for the amount of years of hard work to go into it just in that 45 seconds, and just a mistake that is literally just a few centimeters of a finger dragging against the handle, and then it all goes up in flames. It's horrible. And I think it makes the Finta McCarthy and Paula Donovan and the women's four moments all that much more treasured, I guess, amongst society, and all that much more held up as they should be for such phenomenal achievements, because how many times in the last 10 days have we seen when it goes wrong?
I was just going to say, when you're talking about the seventh there, and, like, you know, he'll have seen what has gone before him. I think with the pommel horse, you don't change your routine. So there's not, it's not like, you know, in some of the vaults, people would have been seeing, oh, actually, they're going up to a 6.2 difficulty because they know they need that. And that's not going to happen with Reese and the pommel horse. And I think that's what you saw Max Whitlock being able to do, just go out, do the routine and get it over and done with, because it's not going to change. You're not, like, he's not going to be able to do anything better than what he wants to do. He's fighting for perfection. It's not like he can say, oh, well, I have to go harder now, or I have to do more now. So I think I'd probably agree with the British journalist that has to come in somewhere, otherwise it's not sport. Like, you know, nobody's a robot. So I do think that probably the seventh, if they were reversed, I wonder what would have happened.
Yeah, but even that was all being presented as a positive beforehand. The fact that he was going seventh, and we were told that he's probably the cleanest of the lot out there. Like, he does, you know, so that he'd be providing a different look to the judges, to everybody else. And they'd be so wowed by how precise he is in everything that they give him the gold medal. So everything gets changed then after the event.
And you got a tiny glimpse of that. Like, his routine obviously did not go to plan, but there was a tiny bit when he got back on the horse. You could see the distance between his hips and the pommel horse, and you could see, you got a glimpse of that, like, oh, that's what they meant in the pre-match analysis, that there is this massive cleanliness to his routine that some of the others didn't have, but it was obviously too short-lived.
I mentioned earlier, Sinead, I don't know, you might completely disagree with this, but his interview afterwards, I know he said all the right things, and it wasn't what people were probably expecting, and maybe we're getting too used to the heartbreaking. It's almost voyeuristic when you're watching these heartbreaking ones, where you're almost waiting for the tears or something like that. And he wasn't given any of that. He's in his own head anyway. He's already looking forward. But it seemed like between that and the way people were talking about it, right from the commentators to the analysts, it was all a bit like, oh, you know, he'll take his learnings and his Paris in 3 years and all that kind of stuff. It almost felt like we'd almost glossed over how awful, in sporting terms, what we just witnessed was.
Yeah, I actually agreed on. I felt the same after his interview. I thought the interview was incredibly composed. But the reason it was incredibly composed is he was saying all the right things, and he knew he probably didn't want to go out there and be caught on camera crying. He didn't want his competitors to see that, I'd say, because he is always thinking about the future. And we've heard him since he was a very young teenager talking about these moments. So I think he was probably thinking, I don't want to go out and be crying on camera and then have to go compete in my next big major. So I'm sure his devastation is happening privately, and I'm sure that processing is happening privately, I would hope, because you can't really gloss over an Olympics, like the 4-year cycle. I do think it helps that it's a 3-year cycle next time around now. I think that there is a mindset shift in that, so 2024 doesn't seem that far away to him.
What was the sense you got of how he was feeling about things afterwards, Carl?
I think with Reese, it's sometimes hard to separate how much is an act and how much is genuinely him. I've no doubt that the vast majority of it is genuinely him, but I just wonder sometimes, is, you know, I mean, I hate using Conor McGregor, I suppose, in any word of a role model, but, like, I think there is a kind of a generation of a lot of young Irish people who have grown up maybe listening to people like Conor McGregor, whereby, you know, this kind of the whole secret mentality and that speak it into existence sort of stuff. And just there was times, I think, I suppose I probably first interviewed Reese about 3 years ago, maybe around the time he won the Europeans, and just it was kind of like disarming to see an 18-19 year old talk about how he will win Olympic gold. And even when his Europeans went wrong back in April, how he said, you know, this won't matter when I have an Olympic gold medal around my neck in August. And there's part of you just, and probably the Irish skeptic and the cynic and the we're not good enough mentality that a lot of us have grown up with, but there's part of you just thinks, like, this isn't really what Irish people say. You know, we say we hope for the best, maybe we'll win it. Reese has always come out with such confidence and bullishness that he is going to do it, and that's just the end of the road. That you always kind of had that concern over a couple of years ago that if it did go wrong in this way on the big stage, how is he going to act? Now, as Sinead said there, I mean, he said all the right things. It was impressively polished and it was impressively controlled, because I'm not sure any of us could be in that situation where it's all gone wrong on that stage with the spotlight looking at you and hold it together. And I've seen so many athletes, some on RTE, some just chatting to us print journalists who've broken down in tears over the last week. So yeah, I think as Sinead said, I think part of it will be done in private, really. I've no doubt that when he went back and had a quiet space that night, there were a lot of tears shed, and I'm sure there probably will be in the weeks to come. But he's the ultimate, I suppose, stage performer, both when he gets out there and when he gets in front of the media, because he's able to say all the right things. But again, I suppose I don't know how much of it is fully legitimate and how much he's still hiding.
Yeah, and you know, there can be a temptation maybe to say, oh, well, you know, he's learned his lesson about the build-up and, you know, he's going to approach it. Like, I actually don't think that makes that much of a difference. You know, you look at someone like Paul O'Donovan is obviously another example of a guy who behaves in a pretty un-Irish kind of way. You know, it's like, you know, over the course of a million years, we'll have won lots of Olympic medals. It's not the sort of sentence you hear from that many people. But, you know, at some stage over the next couple of days, Reece is going to have to come to a conclusion about what happened, you know? And was it tweeting about the pizza he's going to have after the competition, or was it just a case of him not performing when he had to perform? And, you know, the rest of it is just kind of, you know, like, I am just really interested to see how he'll behave in the 3 weeks before Paris in 2024, because I think, like, if that positive mentality has got him to the place where he's qualifying for a pommel horse Olympic final as an Irish gymnast, I don't think you then throw that out and start giving it the poor mouth, you know, over the course of the next 3 years. I'll just be interested to see how that plays out.
And I fully agree. I don't think it makes any real difference. And I think every athlete is individual in that sense, what they should say and what they feel like they need to say in interviews. And for him, it works perfectly. Yeah. I think the only way he might reconsider it is the fallout when it goes wrong. I think if you do talk up your chances that long, then, or that much, then when it all falls apart, I think it's probably a little bit harder to take, knowing that you've probably drawn in this extra publicity and expectation upon yourself by saying the things that he said. But I don't see him changing, and to be honest, I hope he doesn't change, because it's the most refreshing he's the most refreshing Irish in sporting interviewee you would ever find, like, you know, in the last few years to make the statements he does.
Yeah, the margins are small, though. So you are thinking, right, he knows he has the routine. He could have got, you know, if he had just done what he'd done in qualification, he would have got the bronze, for example. So, and he said that is only the second time he's fallen off the pommel horse in his whole preparation. So there was something that he has to fix. You know, if he doesn't fall off routinely when he's practicing, training, or doing simulations of, like, those pressure events, then there is something that needs to be tweaked, and they should be dissecting that. So I think that goes back to Owen's point. Don't gloss over it. They need to dissect, okay, what was it that made me fall off this time?
Yeah, and I don't think suddenly he should change how, I mean, if he wants to speak the way he speaks, it's all good. Yeah, we need people to have, we don't need everybody to be talking down their chances and to be saying they're happy to be there and all that sort of stuff. What about some of the good stuff going on, Carl? There hasn't been that much for the Irish athletes and the track and field so far, beside, with the honourable exception of the relay, the 4x400 mixed relay, which was just a beautiful thing to watch. It was one of those great Olympic things that none of us were thinking about. Maybe didn't even know it was on before it actually happened. And suddenly it's like, oh, these guys are getting to a final and are, you know, somewhat competitive in the final. Incredible.
Yeah, what a buzz. I mean, and I think there's definitely a lot more to come from that area, that team. You know, the 400 meter running is very much, it's a very young team. I think the average age of the team was around 23, 24 that made the final. So I think they can be a lot better in 3 years. Mixed relay, obviously a new event. And I think there's no point, like, I suppose, beating around the bush in terms of points, where I think it will be a lot stronger at the next games, and it'll be a lot harder to make a final at the next games because it was staged early in the program. A lot of the kind of heavy hitting countries, like the Bahamas, Jamaica, USA, their teams were, like, well below the strength they could have been, and even maybe some of the European and South American teams as well, if everyone showed up. I suppose the difference for Ireland was that we had everyone show up, and it was brilliant that everyone did show up, because that got us into a final. But having said that, like, the likes of Rashida Adeleke coming through and a lot of other, so I think we will have a much, much stronger team in 3 years, and there's no reason we can't be looking at getting into that final, or be have a 4x4 for men or a 4x4 for women kind of world champs next year and onwards.
It's such a great event, because I even loved the Nigerian team who tried to take the punt of having the female last anchor and stuff. Like, it's just such a fun event. Well, Cathal, I go to Cathal's Twitter every time there's a race, because I know Cathal will know something that I don't know that he'll tell me like 3 seconds after the race finishes. But Sonia O'Sullivan, I have found brilliant on RT commentary because she's so ruthless. She's obviously a champion herself and she doesn't give any excuses to any athlete or Team Ireland. How big a mistake was it to not have a sub, even if you thought that sub might be a tiny bit slower, fresh? Like, if we had just brought a sub, and like, would that have even made a place difference to us?
I think, well, we did actually have subs. They're both actually, I think they can't even stay in the village because they're subs. They're staying in the hotel. So we have a man and a woman, Rob McDonald and Kleena Manning, who are actually just staying in a hotel outside the village at the moment, passing time, bored stiff all week. But obviously, given that people had run so well in the heat, they weren't called upon. I agree, though. I think, and I know I've banged this drum a lot of times in recent months, I think Rashida Adelecki would have been a great choice, like, to bring. She ran 50.9 at the NCAA Championships for her relay split. She didn't run any regular 400 meter races, so she wasn't brought because of that. But even, you know, if you look what like Phil Healy and Sophie Becker both ran out of their skin in that semi-final, and they ran 51.4 and 51.5, I think it was, and even still they were half a second behind what Rashida split at the NCAA Championship. So I think it would have been great on that basis, like you just mentioned, that if you are going to make a final, to have Rashida here and say, okay, maybe Rashida is a 100 200 meter specialist, but maybe we can use her once. We'll use her in the heat and then we'll bring in Sophie for the final, or we'll use Sophie in the heat and then we'll bring in fresh legs. I think that, and I think given what they learned and given they were 2.5 seconds slower in the final, and I think all of them ran slower splits, I think that probably is something they'll look at next time.
A slightly broader point, Sinead, because I saw Andy Murray tweeting about it over the course of the weekend. Just the idea of mixed sport generally, it's just such a laugh. Like, the mixed relay was so much fun. And I know Andy Murray, I think he was talking about like a Ryder Cup, Solheim Cup kind of crossover, but for tennis. And, you know, it is kind of a no-brainer. Like, you know, say we were talking already in links about the golf and all the rest and how kind of it is quite a staid tournament competition. But, you know, like, the Olympics should be trying to get more and more mixed sporting events into the roster, just because it is totally different and it's so much fun.
It's so much fun and it does so much, I think, for all of the sports as well. Like, it obviously brings on the women's sport. It brings more spectators to the women's sport. You get to know more athletes. And also the athletes themselves love it. You probably saw the British athletes win the triathlon, the mixed triathlon. They had a great L time. And it does put teams together in a different way that... I don't know, it allows people to get to know them better. I think it's kind of the same thing when you see those mixed doubles games where there's probably a little less pressure in them, but you get more personality and like you said, more crack. And, you know, the Olympics isn't all about crack, but it is about trying to figure out how to put national teams together and, you know, bring pride and, you know, strength to a country. And, you know, putting female and males together and, you know, creating interesting competitions is a no-brainer. And like, the relay has been such a good one, the triathlon is such a good one. It would be amazing to see some golf.
Yeah, just so much more fun than what we, and like, as it turned out, the golf was absolutely amazing yesterday. But I mean, for 3 days it was like, you know, like, I'll check the scores at the end of the day. Rory, Shane going well, that's grand, but I'll watch you on Sunday, quite frankly, because this watching 4 hours of golf is not what the Olympics is about, you know.
Exactly. But I kind of find the same about the football. Like, my sister is watching all of the women's football at the moment. I'm like, oh, it's 90 minutes, like, come on, this is not what the Olympics is about.
Yeah, I don't have 90 minutes to spare here. I want 3 minutes of backstory, five minutes of heartbreak, and then move on to the next you know, mini drama.
Although there has been a lot of drama in the women's football as well in it, so it's probably not a great example right now either for this argument.
Carl, tell us, when did Italy become the powerhouse of track and field?
Oh, who knows? I think the high jumper, who's Tamberi, Gianmarco Tamberi, he's very much been on the radar a long time, and he's been a star. And he's, again, I'm sure anyone who's watching last night, I'm sure the stories were told while on TV, like, you know, heading into Rio, one of the big medal contenders. I think he broke his torus and tendons in his foot just before it. And I remember going down to managed to snag access at the Rio Olympics to some of the hospitality areas, and he used to be down there in Rio on crutches, like, with his foot in a cast. I remember seeing him the night of the high jump final and thinking, like, how must this guy be feeling? Because he was jumping better than anyone 2 weeks before the Olympics, and then he did ligaments in his ankle and he's there sitting there in the stands with crutches. I was like, how could you even put yourself through that? But he came back, and what a story that was last night, like, him and Barshim splitting the gold medal. It was incredible. The other guy in 100 has kind of come out of nowhere, Lamont Marcel Jacobs. he first I saw of him really was at the European Indoor Championships this year, and he won gold there, and he had a bullet start. I mean, he's a unit of a guy, like, you know, and generally the more muscly kind of sprinters are really good over 60 meters. But even though it sounds probably stupid to non-athletics people, but the 100 meters does require endurance, and everyone's decelerating over the last 40 meters, and some of them quite substantially over the last 30. So kind of those real powerhouses who are good over the first 50 tend to be slowing down. And I think with him, a lot of people saw him performing unbelievably and just going, okay, he's done well in the heat and he might lead to halfway, but he's never holding this to the finish, surely, because he's more of a 60 meter runner. But then he did it and shocked everyone. And I mean, great reaction at the finish, the two Italians jumping into each other's arms. That was one of those magic Olympic moments. So I think when there was issues raised about the other Italian, as someone said to me on Twitter, as one of the Sports Illustrated writers, with Thomas Barr trying to get into the final, you know, and someone had flagged that maybe the Italian guy in the other heat had been dragging his leg around the hurdles, which would result in disqualification if you could prove it. As someone said to me last night when an appeal went in, they were like, what are the chances of disqualifying an Italian tonight? Zero. It was their night, so that's
yeah.
It's the old opposite luck to the Irish, yeah.
Yeah, the old Eurovision Eurofinals 100 meters trifecta. I'm pretty sure that's never been done before. I can say with absolute 100% certainty that has never been done before in one summer.
Thomas Barr was a bit unlucky. Obviously, he hit his hurdle last night. It hasn't gone well either this morning, Carl. Like, none of the Irish athletes getting through. Sarah Healy, Ciarán McGeehan, Phil Healy, all with, I guess, different stories to tell, but none of them happy stories, unfortunately.
No, all various levels of despondency. And I'd say, I hate using the word devastation, but sometimes when you're talking to these athletes, it is devastation. You know, it's one of the worst things outside of life and death that's happened in their lives, is kind of coming to a stage like this and just letting themselves down. But yeah, all three athletes, like Thomas Barr, I think I asked him last night, I said, which is worse, you know, coming to an event like this where you've absolutely nailed it and you know you're in form to challenge, like, for a final and perhaps even more, or the championships where you went and it went wrong and you just had no excuse? Like, and he said, it's different. It's, you know, this is deep frustration. Like, and I think probably this is better because at least I know it's still there. And I said, like, you know, do you have any thoughts? Like, he's 28. It's not exactly an event for people in their 30s. I said, like, do you have any thoughts on how long you want to keep going? And he said, if I'd run badly tonight and if I'd, you know, been unable to break 49 seconds, maybe I probably would have come away and sat down and said, right, maybe it's time to move on with my life. But given he ran so unbelievably, like, I couldn't believe when he saw the time, like, that was the second fastest time ever. And he absolutely clattered hurdle 7. And, you know, he wasn't that far off going over onto the track when he hit that hurdle. And I kind of saw it and said, right, he's not breaking 49 seconds here. And then to have run 48.23, like, that's faster than he ran to win the European medal. In 2016, he won his Olympic semi-final in 48.39. So he even ran faster than that with clattering the hurdle. His event has moved on. It's going to take, like, low 47 seconds to win a medal. But I think he was headed for a time of 47.7, 47.8 if he can hit that hurdle. And next year we have a Europeans, we have a World Championships. And obviously, as Sinead mentioned, it's only 3 years to Paris, so I think he'll be going nowhere. But yeah, devastation this morning then for the Irish trio. I mean, it was like the version of Dennehy, the Grim Reaper of Irish chances, had shown up and spiked down all of them as well, because Ciarán McGeehan, I mean, your heart broke for her. She didn't really say it on RTE, and then when I spoke to her, she still hadn't, the other heats were been run and she knew she was probably out, but she didn't initially say it. She just said, I had a bad week. And eventually she said, look, I know you won't put it out there until I'm knocked out, but I tore my calf 8 days ago. And she didn't run a step all week. Did a jog on Saturday, did a jog on Sunday. It's normally an injury that requires, as she's a physio herself, and she said that was probably a bad thing because I know it requires 2 weeks minimum rest. Mm-hmm. She had 8 days. She gave it 5 days rest. She had to give it a go. She said, you know, she couldn't not give it a go given she'd taken someone else's spot and being here. But the inevitable happened. I said to my friend, two laps in, even though she was up the front, I said, doesn't look like the usual fluency in the bounce in her stride. Sarah, again, one of those young athletes as well, who it was all about experience, and she was kind of in a no-lose situation. She didn't run that badly. She was 2 seconds off her PB, but she was beating herself up. And, you know, I did say to her, trying to kind of put a positive spin on it for a young person, I kind of said to her, like, you know, it's only 3 years to Paris. This is always going to be an experience. And she came out with one of the most refreshing lines I've heard from an Irish athlete here, because she just refused to engage in that narrative. And everyone always says that about, we'll be back at the next Olympics, but I'm here now. She said, you know, I want to run well now. And I think I could make a semi-final now. And I didn't. And that's why I'm disappointed. And I was like, a part of me was like, good on you. You didn't bite on that line. You didn't put the glossy spin in it. Mm-hmm. You just said, I didn't do what I wanted. And I think that's good in Irish athletes to see, because kind of indicates their ambition And yeah, the final one, I suppose, Finn Healy. I mean, always going to be tired coming in after two 400-meter legs with one day's rest to run a 200. Wasn't her best, wasn't her worst either. Wasn't that bad. That few percentages off, being as ambitious as she is, like Sarah Healy, beating herself up about it. And sometimes you just want to tell these athletes, like, look, you didn't do that badly. You should hold your head high. But, you know, it's in their nature to just go at themselves.
I wonder if part of it, Cathal, is, well, because I remember listening to one of the 800 meters, I think it was Louise, that we don't actually show as much athletics as we should in this country, given how huge a sport it is. And they're really aware that this is the first time that the wider public is paying attention. You know, people are getting up in the middle of the night to watch, or they're checking the next morning, did you qualify? I wonder if that, like, maybe they're completely in their own bubble and it doesn't matter. But does that play into it a little bit? The Olympics is the Olympics, but it's also the only time that it kind of matters to other Irish people that they're representing Ireland, even though they do it all the time, year in, year out.
I really think it has to. I mean, I remember talking to David Gillick during the week and him just saying, you know, obviously the standard is the exact same at the World Championships as it would be for gymnastics or swimmers as when you come here. But he said the difference is for weeks beforehand, your distant mates, your school pals are all messages saying, are you going to win a medal and all this sort of stuff? They suddenly care. And he said, you'd go to a Europeans, you go to World Champs, you come home, and people didn't even know it was on, even if you made the final. You know, they only found about it afterwards. Whereas the Olympics, it's on everyone's radar. It does definitely create a different level of expectation. And I think it's just cruel when it goes wrong for them then, because it's that one kind of big spotlight that's shining.
Yeah, one final point on that, Owen, actually, just the point that Cathal made there. It's like, Orty have been showing the roars. You know, some of it live, some of it recorded for highlight packages and stuff. And it is an interesting question, you know? That this idea that you can wander off European Championships, no coverage whatsoever, no TV interviews after you're finished. The Roars have actually had that over the last 4 years. Like, they have had Evan Ní Chuilín ask, you know, and a TV crew there from RTÉ. And, you know, maybe it is just something to think about. You know, like, I would be
I don't
curious.
Know. I don't know if we can blame RTÉ's coverage or lack of coverage of specific sports for athletes not performing, really.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's an advantage to the Roars. I'm not saying it's necessarily a disadvantage to the athletes. I'm just positing the possibility that maybe it made the Roars' life a little easier. I mean, I don't think any athlete in the world would sign up to that as an excuse, but I'm just saying maybe it's interesting that the Roars have had TV coverage following them for the last 4 or 5 years, and maybe that we're talking, you know, the marginal gains, though, the marginal gains.
sorry, if I could just jump in, there was one point I wanted to kind of make as well, just in chatting to Emmett Brennan, the boxer, during the week, and it plays into Sinead's question. He said basically he hadn't watched the fight back all week. He finally looked at it 6 days after his fight on Saturday, and he said, he apologised to talk to him for a thing I was doing the Sunday Independent. He said, sorry, I had my phone off for a few days. But he said, I'm basically now just turning it on 5 days after my fight. And he said, I literally have got over 1,000 messages across whatever various social media, WhatsApp, etc. And he said, it's going to take me about 3 or 4 go through them all and respond to them one to one. And he just said, I cannot believe what has happened. Like, you know, I knew the Olympics were big, but I can't believe it was this big. And I think to put yourselves in the shoes of someone like that, an amateur boxer who basically no one had really heard of until a month ago when he qualified for the Games, and then no one had heard of him really on the wider public until last week, to sit down and have to open his phone after the biggest disappointment of his life, lost in the first round, and see 1,000 messages from, like, obviously maybe a few dozen that he knows, but the vast majority from people he doesn't know. It's just, I mean, it's a catapult to fame that cannot be good for an individual if things go wrong anyway, that's for sure. And probably not even if things go right.
Sinead, what are we looking forward to for the rest of the week? I'm thinking Kelly is my big one now tomorrow, and hopefully again, I think she's on Thursday. Hang on, I can't believe I'm doing this. Oh yeah, her semi-finals on Thursday. No, Kelly in her quarterfinal tomorrow.
Yeah, Kelly is the big one now, and I kind of feel like we had come into this and I think we had all said, you know, there's 4 or 5 medals in this team. We have 3, and poor Aidan Walsh, you know, I think his medal is very muted now just because he wasn't able to have that silver medal fight. You know, he injured himself in the celebration, so hopefully, you know, in the days to come that'll get the celebrations it deserves. But now there's a lot of hopes on Kelly now. So I do hope that she's able. She seemed so focused in her first fight. And even afterwards, there was a marked difference between, like, you know, there was no celebrations. She just, it was very focused, out of the ring, quick RTÉ interview and gone. So I would still have high hopes for her. But maybe let's not put too much pressure on her, because that has not gone well over the last few days. There was an alert from the Irish Examiner on Saturday saying, what does Super Sunday hold for us? And I thought, no, don't be calling it that. No one has done anything yet. So, yeah. And then other people, I'll be excited to see Natalia Coyle. I think she could perform really well. I'm not sure if there's a medal there, but in the modern pentathlon, she could, you know, give us some exciting things to watch over the, her events over the couple of days.
Yeah, I have to confess, I was kind of fueling the hype job on Sunday morning as well. I just thought it looked so exciting. There had to be one medal coming out of all of that, but it didn't happen. Carl, what about yourself in terms of, not necessarily even the Irish, but maybe internationally in the athletics? What is there anything big we should be looking out for?
I think there's three big races people should look out for. Two of them are the 400 hurdles. I think they're both the best 400 meter hurdle finals that have ever been gathered. Like, you know, even talking to some of the newspaper editors in recent days, and they're asking me to do 100 meter finals, you know, and you almost felt kind of like, I know the 100 meters is where everyone looks, but it's like these two events are actually unbelievable. The women's race, Dalila Muhammad, former world record holder versus current world record holder of the US, Sydney McLaughlin, she's on the biggest contract in the sport. She's an incredible star. I think she's 21 years old now. It'll be the two of them versus the Dutch girl, Femke Bol. Again, she is our Europe's version of their stars. And that's going to be a three-way battle for medals. And I think possibly two of them could break the world record, and all three of them will be threatening the world record. It's just an unbelievably deep event, and someone will crumble and someone will have their heart broken. And in the men's race, Carsten Warholm, again, I'm sure Irish people were well introduced to him last night, against Roy Benjamin, and in Brazil's Alisson dos Santos, probably for bronze. That's going to be a three-way dust-up as well for the gold there. And then on the track elsewhere, men's 1500 meters, Timothy Cherry to Kenya versus Europe's great white hope, which is Jakob Ingebrigtsen of Norway. It's probably a 60-40, even though Chariot is 12-0 against Ingebrigtsen lifetime. But Ingebrigtsen has never been better. I know that sounds stupid saying it's
no
60-40.
One beats Ingebrigtsen 13 times in a row, Carl.
That's exactly the tweet I'm going to have ready.
They're not unbeatable. They just haven't been beaten yet, as Paul said.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I got to just say, after everything we've heard today, Carl, if you could maybe just not attend any of the races involving Irish athletes for the rest of the...
That would be great.
That'd just be fine.
I went to the rowing and I thought that was it. I thought that was broken. But then Djokovic went out and lost.
That's how good McCarthy and O'Donovan are. We probably should mention as well, just because the golf was good and we had really interesting Irish fight there with Rory McIlroy. Leona Maguire, it's very hard to predict golf, but she's in great form going into this. And I think she's excited. She didn't have to kind of become excited like Rory did, so she could be one to watch, but obviously golf is unpredictable over the 4 days, so
one to watch, just not for Carl Dennehy. Listen, Carl, thanks so much. Don't go and watch that golf. Thanks, Sinead. Brilliant stuff.
Cheers.
That's Team Chain brings me back in. Aztec Gold.
Good guy.
Oh my God. Can somebody turn the treble up even more?
If I can change.
Answers please in a postcard to St. and Greavesy, Littlewood's Cup competition.
We don't have enough treble on this thing.
Only one question remains with regards to our Olympics coverage today, and that's what's happening tonight and tomorrow morning.
Good morning, everyone. I loved watching City all year. They were very good, even though I'm a Liverpool supporter.
Hello to all the listeners of Second Captains at home and abroad. Thank you.
Okay, so tomorrow's action begins at 1:27 with Andrew Coskren in the 1500 metre heats, with Phil Healy in the 400 metres at 1:45 a.m. Marcus Lawler is in the men's 200 at 3:05. Leon Reid is in the men's 200 tomorrow as well. And they'll have finals in the evening session around 1:45, that's p.m., if they qualify. Kelly Harrington is in the ring at 4:35 a.m. She is fighting for a medal. 4:35 a.m. Kelly, I was talking last week about how the pressure is a little off Kelly with the Roars winning and all the rest. The pressure is now back on in a major, major way. Yeah, after
I think she'll be okay. Well, who knows? But I think she
shitty Sunday and miserable Monday. Kelly,
yeah,
Harrington,
it's hard to feel too confident, but if anyone can do it.
Yeah. Oliver Dingley, semi-final and final in the 3 metre springboard are at 2 a.m. and 7 a.m. as well tomorrow. If he qualifies today, as we record, it's not looking great. The equestrian jumping individual competition is at 11 a.m. also, with our Irish riders in action. And I should probably, I think, Owen, also start mentioning which track and field finals are on each day as well, and stop focusing entirely on the Irish side of things. So tomorrow we have the women's long jump final at 2:50 a.m. The men's 400 metres hurdle final is at 4:20. The men's pole vault is at 11:20. The women's hammer throw is at 12:35. The women's 800 final is at 1:25. And the women's 200 is at 150.
Lovely. That'll do the job for me, Murph. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Owen. It's been great spending even just a small part of my Bank Holiday Monday with you, my friend. Yeah, I mean, my close friend.
You did refer to me as a work colleague. And work
I know, I felt bad about that. That's why I'm redressing the balance now.
Unbelievable. We'll see all you World Service members again for coverage of the Olympics during the week, the Lions, the hurling semis, and the return of Ken. There's loads going on. Join up now if you're not already a member on secondcaptains.com. Thanks again, Ciarán. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the rest of your Bank Holiday Monday. We'll talk to you soon.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's World Service.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's to persuade there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.